Welcome to the Brew News Podcast, all the news that's fit to be brewed. I'm Andrew Jennings.
And I'm Travis Matherly. Join us as we go a little bit deeper behind the breweries of your favorite beers and learn about new breweries from around the world.
We will be exploring the history and beers of craft brewers and hope to showcase the amazing talent and variety found within the craft beer community, both in the U.S. and abroad.
This week, we'll be focusing on Lagunitas Brewing out of Petaluma, California.
Technically, it's out of Lagunitas. It was originally out of Lagunitas, California.
True. Make life but I don't know how to say Petaluma. So, Andrew, what was your first experience with Lagunitas?
First time I can remember Lagunitas, I had their brown sugar. I bought a sixer of it because it was on sale, because Laura really likes, you know, she just wanted something nice and boozy, and it worked out really well. It's, you know, high alcohol. We're tasting it tonight. It's about 10%. It was a good beer. I remember it being quite tasty. I know that makes it sound like we're a bunch of drunks.
Well, how long ago was that, though?
2 years.
2 years? So you didn't have anything to do with Lagunitas until 2 years ago?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I may have had one in passing, but honestly...
Not that you remember.
Not that I remember.
Hmm.
It could have been like, you know, end of the night, someone handed me a Lagunitas and I just drank it.
Yeah, true.
It's also hard to, you know, when you see it written, you're like, eh, I don't know how to say that. Yeah. So you're like, I'll just go with a New Belgium because I can pronounce those words.
Yeah.
What about you, Travis?
So I think, honestly, I have a pretty vivid memory of it. I think it was like on my own accord. Like it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I was just at the grocery store buying some beer, like getting groceries or something for dinner, walking by the cooler, and I was like, hey, I want a beer, but I didn't want a sixer or something. I walked by a cooler in like a local grocery store and saw a 22-ounce bomber of Hop Stupid. I was like, well, you know what? Why don't I give this a try? Grabbed it because I had an Arrogant Bastard with it, and that was like right about the time I was starting to really get into craft beer. So I grabbed a 22-ounce bomber of Hop Stupid, tried it, kind of enjoyed it. I think it was a little too strong for me at the time.
Right.
Like, it was more than I was expecting, but it was still a pretty good beer. And then ever since then, I've just kind of like slowly tried Lagunitas over the years. You know, a little something else always. That's kind of like the one that I think, I don't know if it's the flagship, but people talk about it, and that's like a Lagunitas beer that you can find everywhere. Then I've had other ones over the years, like the Citronaceous, 12th of Never. There's like an easy something ale, like a lighter version of a little something something that I've had before that's pretty good, but it's kind of hard to find in bars.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, we both have, honestly, that for some reason that one stuck out in my head as I remember the first time I had Lagunitas.
I will say, though, that means that this tasting is going to be fun for us because we're trying a bunch of new things tonight.
Yeah, a lot of beers that we've never gotten from Lagunitas before. Also, interestingly enough, all of the glassware in our kitchen, we have those little mason jar cups, are all Lagunitas glasses provided by my father-in-law. I don't know where he got them, but they all have a dog on one side and it says Lagunitas Brewing Company, but they're made to look like mason jars. So all of my glasses are Lagunitas glasses in
our
house.
Your father-in-law, and I have no idea where he would have found them.
I don't either. Who knows where he gets anything?
That's true. That is true. Well, I guess it's time for us to learn a little bit more about the history of Lagunitas. Founded in 1993 in Lagunitas, California by Tony McGee, Lagunitas Brewery was moved shortly after.
Yeah.
In 1994, they moved to Petaluma.
So they only were there for a year after outgrowing their rural location. So the brewery is named for the town that it was founded in, although they quickly left the town that they were founded in.
Yeah, I don't think there's anywhere where they actually still have a brew pub or brew facility in Lagunitas.
No, I think they just like... Picked up shop and left and said, we got to get out of here. So, Lagunitas is in line with Clown Shoes and Unknown in the fact that they provide no information on their website. Everything I Googled was little to no information. I think even their Wikipedia page was only like half a page. So, if you go to Lagunitas' website, it's a short YouTube video. And when I say short, I mean it's literally 1 minute and 40 seconds.
Could you count it?
Because that's what the timer said.
Oh, I like to imagine you were sitting there with a stopwatch, like, son of a... 1 minute, 39, and 98.
I was like, oh man, this is great. They provided a YouTube video. This will be informative. It's 1 minute and 40 seconds long.
I was about to say, New Belgium has over 1 minute and 40 seconds of videos involving the Hemperor, which is a fake character they made.
Yeah, so this is a 1 minute and 40 second video in which Tony, the founder, explains absolutely nothing to you.
Mm.
Just says he brought a brew kit, made a homebrew. First one knocked it out of the park. Second time is a complete fuck up and made a shit beer. Those were his exact words. And then he said, so I just kept trying it again, didn't get discouraged, decided to keep brewing. Tony's tagline is, if you don't know what you are doing, anything is possible.
You know what? I feel kindred spirit with Tony, except I haven't messed up any beers yet.
Well, except for the fact that he's like purposefully unhelpful.
Oh, it's not Tony's fault, really. And we'll get to why it's not Tony's fault in a minute.
No, it kind of seems like it. That was Tony's attitude the whole time,
though. Oh, it's like, eh,
I don't care.
So, I know we talked about this in our Ballast Point episode. 93, I guess that predates Ballast Point. So, they may not have been involved with the homebrew mart. I'm sorry. Lagunitas is probably not anywhere close to San Diego.
Yeah, because as we know about our California geography from Ballast Point.
It's not my fault that Lagunitas is a weird town.
Yeah. Well, while Andrew looks up the distance between Lagunitas and San Diego, California, we'll talk about their growth. Lagunitas was one of the fastest growing craft breweries in America during the early 2000s. So about 7 years, they had gotten established. They were getting set up and then they're growing and expanding rapidly. To put this in perspective, from 2004 to 2010, over a 6 year period, they went from 27,000 barrels of production to 106,000 barrels of production.
Well, that actually hits really well with what we've seen before in the growth. Between 2000 and 2010, almost every brewery we've profiled that existed during that time span grew. Now, they grew a lot more than anyone else we've seen, but because they quadrupled their size, more or less. But we've seen a lot of breweries that doubled and tripled during that time period. Because craft beer, I mean, you and I just started drinking, that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I were just killing it for that market.
Yeah. But I don't know, between 2004 and 2010, I was just starting to get in the craft beer scene on the tail end of that. Before that, we were in high school.
I don't know what you're talking about. 2010, I graduated college.
Well, there you go.
Also, Lagunitas is more or less a suburb of San Fran, so yeah, had nothing to do with San Diego.
There you go. In 2011, they were doing this expansion with minimal help, really. They only had 92 employees in 2011, but they distributed in 32 states.
That's actually pretty good, though. You can.
That
you
is
can,
good for 106,000 barrels of production.
I mean, think about Foothills, for example. They don't have anywhere close to that number of employees. And they, mind you, they don't do 100,000 barrels a year, but they do a pretty decent amount with even less employees.
Yeah, but that 106,000 barrels seems like that would be spread pretty thin over 32 states. So lot of beer going to each place. So you can't distribute to an entire state. You're going to certain locations.
Well, think about like Clown Shoes too. Like they had distribution to all these states and they do state specific beers where they do one batch of a beer. And that's where I'm sort of thinking they would go with that because, you know, everything's a special release, which is interesting because on the side of their bottles, everything says it's an unlimited release.
Well,
that's probably new because not all their bottles, but they're,
yeah, this says limited, unlimited on the side of the one I'm drinking right now.
And the one I'm drinking as well. Sorry, my computer's making noises.
Yep.
I'll get that fixed.
Anyways, while Andrew is dealing with some technical issues, after 2011, in April of 2012, Lagunitas announced that they would be opening a Chicago location with a 250-barrel brew house with 600,000-barrel capacity.
So 250 barrels, put it in perspective, Sierra Nevada's breweries only have a 200 barrel brew house. Those copper kettles we've seen at Sierra in Nashville, that's a 200 barrel system. They have a 250 barrel system.
So they're trying to upstage Sierra Nevada and New Belgium?
They're trying. Well, they were.
They were, yeah. So 600,000 barrel capacity, they started production in Chicago in 2014. They had announced plans to open a third brewery in Azusa?
Sure, sounds good.
I honestly thought that it was Arizona, USA, when I read it, because it's A-Z-U-S-A. And I was like, oh, they're opening a third brewery in Arizona.
To the maps!
But it's Azusa, California. They announced that this year in 2018 and said that that brewery would have a 1.9 million barrel capacity.
Dang, that's actually a suburb of LA, or just outside of LA. If you're from LA and you don't like me calling Azusa a suburb, LA shouldn't be so big.
And if we're saying it wrong, please tell us how to pronounce Azusa.
It's probably Azusa.
Eh,
I don't know. I'm just
like Azusa.
I'm just messing with you now. I have no clue. Because of their Chicago brewery, I actually thought they were a Chicago brewery, just like Finch's.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually no clue that they were based in California for years.
Yeah, I never knew that Lagunitas was a town in California, but...
Oh, I definitely didn't know that until I read the notes you had done.
Yeah. Well, with the 1.9 million barrel capacity brewery announced in Azusa, California, on their website, it says that it is on hold and will not open this year as they are conducting more quote-unquote due diligence. So it sounds like they're probably having some issues.
It's probably not opening, is the short answer.
Yeah. Yeah. It was supposed to open this year, and they've halted that for some reason.
Yeah, so their current production is about 916,000 barrels. Sorry, I shortchanged them, 420 barrels.
I was going to say, I specifically wrote 916,420 barrels.
And we'll get into why 420 is important to them in a minute, which actually...
That's a pretty good segue.
Yeah, I got you. but that puts them actually right below New Belgium in terms of total production in a given year. Now, we haven't really talked about them before in terms of their craft brew production, and we'll get into that in a minute.
So if you're wondering if that makes them one of the largest craft beer producers in the country...
It would have.
It would have, but unfortunately not, and we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah. So not only do they have all their locations out in California, they also have a Seattle tap room and a beer sanctuary, but... We're not really sure where this sanctuary is. Do I just grab a beer?
No, I think it's in Seattle.
Oh, it's in Seattle.
It's a Seattle tap room and quote-unquote beer sanctuary.
Oh, that says whatever, not wherever.
Yeah, that says whatever the hell that is. They don't explain what a beer sanctuary is. They don't say anything about it other than that it exists. So I don't know if that's like a R&D facility that they may have up in like a small barrel system or if it's where they brew like old style ales. Like beer sanctuary to me seems like that would be something where you brew like styles that you don't see very often anymore to like preserve styles of beer.
You do small tin, maybe one barrel batches, and you just try them different ways. Yeah.
Release them in the tap rooms and see kind of like how the crowd reacts to it.
Either that, you run in there and you scream sanctuary and they hand you a beer.
That would be sanctuary. And they give you a stein of beer.
If I go to Seattle anytime soon, mm-hmm. I'm trying it.
I don't think... Literally, like, maybe five people would know what you were doing.
You know what? If I get a free beer out of it...
It'd be worth it.
It'd be totally worth it. Otherwise, people think I'm crazy, and they may still give me a free beer to leave.
Yeah, just to make you go away.
Just to make me go away. So, why are we saying that they're not, the number four brewery?
Why are they not the fourth largest craft brewery, Andrew?
Well, because they're not technically a craft brewery.
Technically, it's not even close anymore.
No, not anymore. So, in 2015, they sold 50% of their stake to Heineken. Now, if you're not familiar with Heineken, it comes in green bottles, mm-hmm. and it's a Dutch beer that, mm-hmm. when it came over across the Atlantic, it sort of skunked, which created a nice skunky flavor, which Americans, for some reason, because at the time we had shit taste in beer, we liked for some reason.
Yeah.
So Heineken became this big, massive brewery out in Amsterdam, and now they just ship their beer all over the world.
The freaky deaky Dutch.
Ooh, the Dutch. I love the Dutch.
So, I have a note in here that just says Futurama quote, it grows the brand. So, do you know what I'm talking about?
It's the
Futurama episode where they defrost the, like, 90s executive guy.
Oh, that guy!
With the bonitis.
Oh,
he makes
yeah.
the vice president of the company. He's like, what does that even mean? It grows the brand, Leos. So, Heineken bought the 50% stake in Lagunitas to expand their brand internationally. It thought it would help them grow the brand somehow. But unfortunately, less than 2 years later in 2017, Heineken bought the remaining 50% of the company. So Tony just handed it all over to Heineken and said, here you go.
I really want to know what he paid for because we know, well, what he was paid for because we know Terrapin went for what? A bill? They went for a solid bill.
No, that was Ballast Point.
Oh, you're right, not Terrapin. Sorry.
Ballast Point went for a billion.
Yeah.
I don't Ballast remember what Terrapin went for. I mean, we've been, kind of been all over the place with the numbers. Like, Wicked Weed went for 100 and some
million.
Odd billion. Million? Yeah. Not billion.
Well, let's think. Wicked Weed's distribution at the time was very small.
Yeah. Lagunitas is in pretty over, much pretty nationally.
Pretty much national. They were going for an international footprint, so they sold to Heineken, which makes sense. They have an international footprint.
But Lagunitas is wholly owned and now a subsidiary of Heineken International. Tony McGee stayed on as CEO and continues to grow the brand and work to make Lagunitas a worldwide distributed beer. I did see that he was trying to expand the Lagunitas brand into like Japan, Asia, like some of Europe and that kind of stuff. So they're really going to need every single bit of that 1.9 million barrel capacity of that new brewery that they are
holding.
holding over. But I guess now you're getting your stuff brewed at Heineken.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the big kicker is, you know, we've talked about this before with selling out to InBev, AB InBev, is that it's not that you lose capacity. It's that your flagship beers, whatever they may be in the case of Lagunitas, can be brewed at those other facilities because barring some crazy water
quality issues,
not water quality, but like water chemistry issues, which you can trick. You can make the water whatever you want it to be, really. Mm-hmm. You can brew beer wherever it is to get the same consistent flavor.
Yeah. And I think that would be like, so Heineken would probably take like the little something and like two or three, maybe upwards of six beers, I would imagine, and say, we'll brew these all over the world and distribute them internationally. You can have the smaller stuff that's not going to play well in the international market, that's not going to go to consumer tastes in Europe and in Asia. Maybe some of these sours or strong ales or like certain things, like Imperial IPAs are not going to play to taste in Europe so much as they do in America.
Right, because and Lagunitas is interesting because they do have a lot more American-style beer, less of that European-style beer that we're accustomed to.
Yeah, and a fun note and an aside, while it said Tony McGee stayed on as CEO, I did find an article from 2018, probably only a couple of months old, that now said that quoted CEO Maria Stipp.
Oh, good old Maria Stipp.
So apparently Tony is out as CEO because they quoted Maria, this lady Maria Stipp, in an article as the CEO of Lagunitas less than 2 months ago, like maybe 3 or 4 months ago max. But I don't know if Tony's no longer with the company or what the deal is, but he stayed on as CEO originally, but he is obviously no longer the CEO of Lagunitas.
Fair enough. So not only do they have a new CEO, but they've also had some past, shall we call them indiscretions?
I called it marijuana and legal issues.
That's true. So they have a long-standing association with weed culture, which is why, you know, the 420 barrels were important.
That extra, I don't know that it was barrels. It was important because you made it important.
Yes.
But it was a good segue.
So they have a they've had issues with weed. They like to take their beer to quote a higher level than most breweries. They've had
literally and figuratively.
Oh yeah, they're all about that. They've had beers and advertising associated with the 420 motto. Travis, do we know another brewery that may take some issue with that?
Let's see. Oh, yeah. Our friends at Sweetwater that have the 420 Extra Pale Ale.
That may become a problem for yeah. Lagunitas.
So Lagunitas, with their advertising and beers associated with the 420 motto, resulted in a beer name being banned by the FDA. I don't know what that beer name was. Didn't say. But it also resulted in a trademark claim by our friends at Sweetwater Brewing back in 2013, which caused them to drop any and all 420 markings on their labels and products or advertising.
So who dropped it was Lagunitas, not Sweetwater. Sweetwater got to keep their name.
Well, because 420 Extra Pale Ale is like their flagship beer.
That is
so
the
they're not going to let that one go
slightly
or idly by.
And who owns the majority share in Sweetwater again? Is that InBev or...
No, that was a... If you hadn't said anything, I would have remembered.
It's not... Oh, we're just going to go back through.
But to interwebs.
But I'm saying they're a parent company. They're a parent company now. There's no way they would let this fly.
Yeah, so you're not going to... Essentially, Sweetwater is not going to let you take their flagship beer and
do anything.
Have people confuse the 420 logo with Lagunitas and Sweetwater. Let's see. Sweetwater.
Oh, TSG Consumer Partners.
Yeah, but that's only a minority share.
That's who they sold out to totally.
Mm-hmm. No, they have a less than 25% interest. They're still considered a craft brewery.
That's right. Okay, never mind. I'm thinking of Terrapin. The Georgia breweries. I get the Georgia breweries confused. All right, so So not only do they have this, you know, high weed section, but they also used to have a weekly weed smoking parties to promote their beers. They had to stop this for obvious legal reasons.
Yeah. Let's just have a party at the brewery every week where everybody gets super stoned when we release a beer.
The crazy thing is, this is all taking place in California. I guess maybe Chicago, too, at this time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's mostly in California at Petaluma. But that's medical marijuana is legal, not recreational back then.
Rec is now, but right. Back then, it was
back
just...
Back then, not.
It was just medical. Because we're talking like 2005. We're not talking...
And speaking of 2005, in 2005 on St. Paddy's Day, this was kind of like the height of the issues that they had. Lagunitas was raided by the California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control. This was the result of a sting operation attempting to bust employees and patrons for selling and smoking marijuana on the premises. So they were busting Lagunitas employees for selling weed out of the brewery. Yeah.
You want a pint and a dime, my man?
Yeah. I mean, really.
It's the pint and dime, you know. Everyone knows about the pint and dime.
Yeah. No, while no arrests or charges were filed, it did result in a 20-day suspension of operations for the investigations. Tony was quoted as saying, "No one was willing to sell it to them, but they were willing to give it away for free."
Dang.
So he is not denying that they were peddling marijuana out of the brewery. He's just saying they weren't selling it. He's like, "Nah, we're just giving it away for free because we love everybody."
Well, I guess this comes down to a lot of the same issues you have with bootlegging. It is not technically illegal to make moonshine.
It is illegal to sell it.
It is 100% illegal to sell it.
Because the IRS does not get a collection of the taxes.
Well, if North Carolina would also make making moonshine legal, it solve a lot of those problems.
They did. Besides the point. There's two legal moonshine brewers.
Yeah,
Cat Daddy and...
Cat Daddy and Troy and Sons. But Troy and Sons is much better than Cat than Midnight Moon. But that's beside the point. If you make the brewing legal and the selling legal, you can tax it and make money off of it. I don't know what the rules were at the time.
Yeah, in 2005, I can't imagine that California took lightly to a brewery selling marijuana.
Well, honestly, I'm shocked they don't have a hemp beer. We've had several breweries with hemp beers now.
Yeah, you would think they would be on that, but maybe they backed off. Well, since the sell at Heineken, they probably...
I don't know. I had the G13 from Sweetwater recently. And
so did I.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It was not nearly as hempy on the aroma as... Or marijuana.
Marijuana? The hemper?
Yeah, as the hemper. The hemper... Ooh, man.
Wasn't as weedy.
Yeah, that was... I got high. I got a contact high thinking about that one.
But thanks to the 2005 raid by the California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control, Lagunitas brewed a beer to commemorate the event, and they called it the Undercover Investigation Shutdown Ale.
I'm both curious what that beer tastes like and very concerned about what that beer tastes like.
I'm more amazed that they were just like, "Hey, this is an FU to you guys for trying to shut us down or to bust us for doing something," and it didn't stick.
Honestly, that sounds like Lagunitas, though.
It does.
Not everything is great. Now, we talked about how they did sell out. And on October, I guess the parent company, Heineken, decided that it was time to slim down. It's time to lose some weight.
Cut the fat.
Sure, we'll cut the fat.
Trim the fat.
And by trim the fat, we mean 12% of their workforce.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mind you, if I lost 12% of myself, I'd probably look pretty good.
I would definitely look better.
Better? Oh, yeah, I'll give you better.
Depends on what percentage of that. Like, are you taking it equally? Or
we're
going
to take your foot and then up to your knee on the other leg.
Yeah. Depends on how that 12% is distributed.
The big reason for this was they're citing increasing pressure in the craft beer market. This actually impacts about 100 employees.
Yeah, so where we said Lagunitas as of 2011 only had 92 employees, as of 2018, they have over 900 plus employees. So that is a big jump.
And they have two different breweries and two different locations.
But that's 7 years. That's 10 times the amount of employees that you previously had.
I'll bet a lot of that is due to the...
But you think it has to do with the absorption into Heineken?
Right. It has a lot to do... Not the absorption into Heineken, but they open a lot of brew pubs, too. Mm-hmm. Not just the breweries themselves. Breweries can be run on very few people. When we did the New Belgium tour, they were showing us their packaging facility. The packaging facility for the million barrel brew house they have in Asheville can be run by like 10 people.
Yeah, so, automation.
Right, because automation. So a lot of those employees are actually going to be your barroom employees, your taproom employees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm betting a lot of these 100 employees, though, are due to automation brought in by Heineken. That's probably where they're losing their employees, because Heineken, of course, they're going to have crazy automation. They want They want like New Belgian style. Well, not New Belgian style.
Or Heineken's taking over control of brewing the mainstay beers. Mm-hmm. And you're only brewing smaller beers at your actual breweries. So you don't need the amount of people there because you're not brewing the same amount of beer.
Yeah. That could work. Yeah, 100 people would be about, you know, a good size brewery.
Like, yeah.
A really good size brewery, obviously.
That's interesting. That was just October of this year, so that's very recent. And that is, I don't know, it's just unfortunate to hear.
The reason for this is interesting because they decided that, you know, planning to lay off their workforce because of this pressure in the craft beer market. They're not wrong. Right before this podcast, I looked at the Brewers Association mid-year report for 2018. It looks like there's a retraction in sales for the largest breweries. So those are your folks brewing more than a million barrels a year,
mm-hmm.
which Lagunitas would fall under.
Yeah.
But you're still seeing continued strong growth for breweries that sell less than 10,000 barrels or less a year.
So there's like a sweet spot where you either want to be small and local or you want to be gigantic. Being in that in-between kind of hurts you.
Actually, no. Being big is bad. So I'm going to show Travis right now what the actual chart looks like. You'll see that a million barrels plus, negative 2.4% mid-growth year for 2018. So that's January through July through June 2018. You know, 100,000 barrels to a million barrels sold is minus 1.4%. And then you see positive growth between 10,000 up, that's 5.5% roughly, and 10,000 barrels or less, you're looking at 30% growth.
Yeah, so you're seeing the most growth at the bottom end mm-hmm. of that spectrum. So your local microbreweries that don't do a lot of distribution outside.
Correct.
Local, maybe even the state level. When you get into regional distribution, probably that's when you're seeing moderate to slim growth, but still 5% growth is decent. I would say it's not 30%, but
yeah.
Then once you get to that large scale production brewery where you're national,
mm-hmm.
you're giant, you maybe even distribute internationally, that's when you're seeing the retraction and the decline in your sales due to just kind of like a saturation of the craft beer market.
Right. So you're actually seeing, you've been seeing this trend for a while, but this is the first time you're really seeing a lot of negative growth in the higher end breweries. If you can take a high end brewery, a large brewery, and make it feel local, mm-hmm. it mitigates a lot of those problems.
Yeah, but if people feel like your brand is giant, national, international, it's like this big macro brewery culture, they shy away from it because it kind of like, it's almost the same in like food trends where you see a push back to like farm to table, organic, local, buy local, drink local. I know we use the hashtag drink local a lot on Instagram.
You do. I'm terrible at Instagram.
Well, yeah, I control our Instagram.
You can tell when I make a post and when Travis makes a post.
You can tell when Andrew makes a post and then when I go back and edit that post because of the lack of hashtags. Anyways, it's like this trend where like people want to support their local brewers, and we always tell people to get out and support local, drink local. Like these people in your community, your local brewers, they're places that you can go hang out. They're good for your local economy. They're good mm-hmm. for your regional economy. But people have kind of like taken that to an extreme and saying like, we're not like, you know, some people boycott macro breweries and national breweries, and that's where this kind of stems from to me.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is people in our generation tend to push more towards this local presence. People in our generation also are the primary drinkers of craft beer, so it makes perfect sense that these would happen. I was actually approached by a local brewer in our area. He wanted me to be an angel investor. That wasn't happening for a whole host of reasons, mostly because I don't have the kind of cash to be an angel investor.
Yeah.
But
and if we did, we'd start our own brew pub.
Yeah. If I did, I'd start my own. But that's beside the point. But it was very interesting to talk to him and hear his business proposition and how he works it out. And he's right. And it's the same thing we're seeing. If you are a small local brewery, you're going to be fine. If you are a regional brewery in that mid-grade, you're flirting with danger, but you may be okay. So, but if you get outside of that, you go pure national and you're just distribution, people aren't going to buy your stuff because you're inundated. If I go to Harris Teeter, with a local grocery store, of course, and I see, you know, the macro side, usually our grocery stores have macro beers on one side and micro breweries, craft breweries on the other.
Yeah.
I go to the craft brewery side. I'm personally not overwhelmed because I'm expecting that, but there's 30, 40 breweries in our grocery store, not our bottle shop.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go to the craft beer side of that aisle, as you're saying. It's funny that it is split like that. Or if it's not an aisle, it's one end or the other. Mm-hmm. It starts macro and it goes to...
craft, yeah.
Craft, and then it goes down to ciders. Local craft. Oh, okay. Well, and then, yeah, ciders. That's a... Yeah. God. But you see this thing where you walk into that craft section now, and it can be overwhelming if you don't know what you're doing and if you don't know that much about craft beer, if you're just trying to get into it. I now have 60 choices. Not only do I have 30 breweries staring me in the face, but I've got 6 beers from each brewery. Then you've got your local, wherever you live, mm-hmm. has got all of these beers. Well, what do I try? And people can get overwhelmed and intimidated, and then you just go to back to the other side of the aisle and get one of the 7 beers on that side of the aisle.
Yeah. Well, I guess we've talked about beer. We've talked about the brewery. Let's talk about the beers they brew.
Yeah.
So year-round, I'm going to run through these real quick, because we do want to get this episode over at some point.
We want to get to trying the beer.
Yeah. So the year-round episodes. Oh, good Lord. The year-round beers, they have the IPA, the Little Something Something Ale, which is a pale wheat ale. The Something Easy Pale Ale. Which
we will be having the Little Something Something tonight.
And the IPA. The Something Easy is just a lighter version of the Little Something Something. That's Little, I guess I should say it. Not yeah. Lil. It should be Lil, though.
Little.
There's a lot of apostrophes in that. They have a Pils, which we're not drinking. Thank God. 12th of Never Pale Ale. The Super Cluster Ale, which is a double Imperial IPA.
Yep. Then they have the Dogtown Pale Ale. The Daytime Fractional Ale, which is a Session IPA, which we will be having tonight. The Maximus Imperial IPA, we'll be having that tonight as well. The Hop Stupid Ale Imperial IPA, another one for tonight. The Imperial Stout. The Aunt Sally Sour Ale, which according to their website is discontinued for now.
Which I question this.
Yeah, it leads me to believe that they're bringing it back, but we're not sure. And then finally, the Lagunitas Sucks Ale, which is an Imperial IPA, which we are having tonight, but according to their website, is discontinued.
But it was freshly bought from Harris Teeter.
Yeah. So Lagunitas Sucks Ale, according to the website, just it's a little bit about this, but it says it's discontinued for now, but it is brewed as a substitution when they didn't have the capacity to brew brown sugar, which we will be having tonight and talk about in a second. It was pulled out of rotation to make room for new and exciting beers, but it will be back. Maybe. Eventually.
My question is, how old is this website? When was it last updated?
I don't know, but they do say that Lagunitas Sucks is pulled out of production, but we have a bottle of it tonight, so we will be trying.
And it's not an old bottle. It wasn't something we found at a bottle shop. We found this at Harris Teeter.
Yeah, so it's going to be... fairly fresh, I would hope.
Yeah, I hope so. So limited release, they have the Monzango IPA. I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, it's a brand new release according to the website, and it is a mango IPA. So that is like, it. When we were researching this, it had just hit the shelves.
Oh, okay. I would love to get hold of this next beer, the Dark Swan. It's a sour ale with petit sirah.
So it's a sour ale with wine grapes.
Heck yeah, you know I'm down.
Citrusinensis?
Oh, citronensis.
Citronensis.
It's like Genesis, but with citrus. So it's a pale ale. Then the brown sugar, strong ale, barley wine-esque type beer? We're drinking that tonight, so we'll talk about that later. The Born Again Yesterday Unfiltered Pale Ale. The Undercover Investigation Shutdown Ale, which...
we mentioned.
Yeah. The Cappuccino Stout, Little Something Extra.
Cappuccino.
That's his cappuccino.
Cappa. Well, yeah, sure. I like calling it cappuccino. Cappuccino. It's got a dog in the front, so they should call it
cappuccino. Oh, they should call it cappuccino.
Yeah, I think Starbucks may have something to say about that.
So they do have a little, like, cute little puppers on the front of a lot of their beers.
Yeah, we didn't mention that earlier.
Yeah, we didn't, but that's fine.
Well, a little something has, like, a pinup girl on it, so.
Yeah, that's true, but some of their beers also have this adorable little
puppers. I think their dog is, like, the bigger logo. It's either the dog or the pinup girl.
I don't see her outside of the Little Something.
I think that one's kind of become like, you know what that is. Like, It's the Lagunitas Pinup Girl. But yeah, the little dog with the... It looks like the dog from Little Rascals.
Yeah, looks like Petey.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you remember the name because I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't remember the name.
I grew up watching the black and white Little Rascals.
I did too, but I just forgot the dog's
name. How'd you forget?
Or the dog from Target.
No, that's an American...
Bulldog.
Yeah, American Bulldog with the... No, it's not a bulldog.
It's a French terrier. It's a French bulldog.
No, the Target dog is not. Yeah. Not either of those. It's an American something or other. It's got the Bull Terrier. It's an American Bull Terrier. That's what it is.
We'll cut that entire section out.
I doubt it. We'll leave it in for
fun. Then you have the Little Something Extra Ale, which is an Imperial IPA. The Lucky 13 Imperial Red Ale. The Gnarly Wine, which is a barley wine.
Gnarly, brah.
Yeah.
Got to ride them Cali waves, baby.
You can keep it. Censored Dry Hopped Rich Copper Ale / Red Ale. The Wilco Tango Foxtrot, which I almost bought. I almost bought that. It's an Imperial Brown Ale.
Oh, that would have been good.
Nighttime Black IPA and the Hairy Eyeball Ale, which is an American Strong Ale. All
right. So they also have a bunch of one-hitters. These are beers they brewed one time?
I don't know if they just brewed them one time specifically or they just brew them from time to time. And I'll tell you why in a second when we get down to one of the beers.
Okay. Well, this is the Sonoma Farmhouse. They have the Sonoma Farmhouse Brett Stout, which is a sour stout ale. I'm very curious about that. A Bruttiomyces stout?
That could either be really good or really bad.
Either way, it would be very unique.
It's unique. I'll give them that, but that is going to go one of two ways.
It depends on what else they put in there to make it work. They have the Passion Grass Pale Ale, the Cherry Jane Sour Ale, the Born Yesterday Unfiltered Fresh Hop Pale Ale. That's a lot.
Yeah. They also have the Willetized Coffee Stout, which is aged in rye Willets whiskey barrels. I have had that. It is super hot. Should have let that one age, but it was still really good. And this is why I'm curious about the one-hitters. They have the Waldo's Special Ale, which is a triple IPA. I see this every single year.
I'm starting to think that their website's not up to date.
I think like maybe it's a one-hitter. Like they brew it once a year.
Okay.
And then they release it. So they don't explain what a one-hitter is versus a limited release. Limited release is probably available, what, 3-4 months out of the year?
Yeah, maybe. Probably.
And then the one-hitter is probably like, hey, we brewed this. One batch for the year. It's in distro. If you find it, great. If not, because some of the local bottle shops around us get the Waldo's Special Ale, but they get it every year. And then the Eroica.
Eroica.
Which is the Flanders Red Ale / Sour.
And that is a beer, if I find, Laura and I are going to drink the heck out of that.
Good luck, because I have never seen or heard of half of these beers.
Like I said, if I find it, it's mine.
It will be mine.
Well, I'm thirsty. You thirsty?
Yeah, let's start drinking. So our first beer tonight will be the Little Something Something Ale, which I think we would argue is their flagship beer. This is a pale wheat ale coming in at 7.5% ABV, 64.2 IBUs. They are oddly specific with their IBUs.
Yeah, most people don't go to 2 sig figs or...
No, and 1.07 OG, which I am not 100% sure what that is. Andrew, do you know?
Original gravity, my man.
That's what I would
say. So this is, that's the specific gravity of the wort prior to the yeast getting their mitts on it.
Oh, well, that explains that. So I assume water would be a 1.
More or less, yeah. Pure water's got a 1. And then alcohol actually will lower that as the alcohol forms in the beer. So in this case, a 1.07 is actually pretty strong. The New Zealand that we did, the New Zealand that turned out to be about 7% alcohol, I think it started at a 6.8, a 1.068. So this is in that same ballpark.
Okay. Well, they call this a special ale with a lot of wheat and rich with hops, dry hoppy finish with a silky body.
Mmm, silky.
Don't get a lot on that nose, really.
Yeah, the nose is very watery. I mean, it's just sort of there.
Mm-hmm. I get a little bit of the wheat, but not a ton.
I'm getting a touch of like a citrus hop there, like a nice like a lemon zest to it on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a touch.
When you drink it, it's definitely a wheat beer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's nice, though. I like the hop finish on it.
Yeah, it is kind of a little more, it's bright.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little citrusy, like lemony.
Oh yeah, that's refreshing. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, it is clear. It is yellow, clear, bubbly. It looks like a good pale ale. They say it's a wheat. I'll accept that. I'll buy that.
Yeah, and it's got a little bit of head retention on it. You know, a little film on the glass, and it leaves a little bit of foam on the side of the glass as you drink it. Overall, that's pretty. That doesn't taste like 7.5%.
No, that's dangerous. It's good though. I like that. I would go back to that. That's a good. Let's say sneak up on you tailgating beer.
Yeah, a buddy of mine who loves Lagunitas just I think keeps a fridge full of little something somethings in his refrigerator. He's not a huge IPA guy, but he loves that beer. And that was actually for 64 IBUs. I probably expect it to be just a little more bitter, but
64.2.
Point two. Yeah, can't forget the decimal places. But that was actually not very bitter until the very end. There's like just a little bit of bitterness on that back end, but not bad.
The wheat and the malt actually gives a good sweetness to it. That's where that sweetness is coming from on the front end.
Yeah, that was
that was better than I expected.
Well, I've had a little something before, but it's been a while, so that's actually much easier drinking than I remember it being. And I don't think I ever really looked into it, but I wasn't aware that it was actually just a pale wheat ale. I thought it was an IPA or some kind of other ale.
As we're going to find with Lagunitas, it's going to be it's IPA heavy brewery. So let's go to their session IPA. This is the daytime. This is the lowest alcohol beer we'll be having tonight. It's a session IPA, like I said, 4.65 ABV, 54.2 IBUs. I cannot shortchange it to 0.2 IBUs. this is a 1.042 OG. It's interesting that when you're doing the original gravity, it really does translate to what is the first number in your hundreds column.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to translate to your final ABV pretty well.
Oh, okay. So I see what you're saying. So the 1.042, the 4.2, put a decimal in there, and that's close to the 4.65. That's the alcohol in the beer.
Right, right, right. Because all the ones we've brewed so far, that like the New England IPA was, I think, it was a 1.086, and it finaled around 9.5.
Yeah.
And I acknowledge that was a little high. I had a really good yeast strain for that one. But for the others, it was 1.05, finished at 5.5. 1.069, finished around 7. So, yeah, it's pretty spot on.
I think it's interesting for a company that does not provide a lot of information that they are this specific.
And it's on the bottles.
It's on the bottles that they are this specific with their numbers, but they give you no information about anything else.
Yeah. So they describe this as boldly dosed with dry hops and a toasty malt foundation.
Again, not a ton on the nose.
I get a lot more than on the little something. Little something.
Yeah, it's a little more citrusy on the nose.
I'm actually getting more of that malt characteristic.
Hmm.
And this is an interesting color, too. It looks like a Berliner Weiss.
It does not look like a session IPA. Yeah, it is extremely light for a... Yeah, and it's like slightly cloudy.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
That has almost no hop flavor.
Right, and I'm not getting any of the... I'm getting some of the hops, so I'm getting like the citrus fruit tones, but I'm not getting any toasty malt.
What is there in the citrus to me is extremely muted. It's not easily discernible.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like it could be grapefruity, could be orange. It's kind of just hard to tell. It's like this really faint...
I wonder what hop they're using. I wonder if they're using a German hop or something that's a lot lighter.
Yeah, because the toasty malt, like you said, is not there for me either. I think the malt in this, what little malt you get, probably kills out what little hop characteristic you would have. And Andrew is once again looking up clones of the beers to see if he can determine something.
And no, it doesn't really make sense. The clone recipe, yet again, they didn't provide this. Some of our breweries do provide the hop varieties, which are nice.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is just Centennial Columbus Cascade. That's all that's in there.
Yeah. And they're talking about boil, aroma, dry hop. I'm seeing two row pale and caramel crystal, which is pretty standard stuff, and carrot pills.
Yeah.
Well, really, those are light malts.
All these are light malts, which explains the color, because the color looks like a Berliner
Weiss. Yeah, so I don't know how you go with that light of a malt bill and describe it as toasty, because those are not typically malts that you would toast that you would get big roasted flavors out of.
Because the caramel malt, that's all. It's because the Crystal 40 caramel malt, that's it. Assuming, yet again, we're assuming this clone recipe is accurate.
Yeah.
But yeah, the hop variety is odd because usually you don't get that light of a flavor. I bet you that's why.
They're using so little?
Yeah. The recipe I'm looking at is a 10-gallon recipe. 1, 2, 5, 7, 8. They use 8 ounces of hops. The 5-gallon New Zealand IPA recipe we made... used 8 ounces of hops. So use more hops than this 10-gallon recipe.
Yeah, so I guess that's probably in concert with it being a session IPA, but that's still very light. Yeah, there just wasn't a lot on that one for me. I mean, that's easily drinkable, but I don't know that it's got a flavor profile that I cared for.
It's not. Yeah, it's not memorable.
Well, because there was a little flavor profile.
Fair.
All right, so next up, we are just going to go straight into the Lagunitas IPA. This is an American IPA, 6.2% ABV, 51.5 IBUs, and 1.059 OG. They describe it as well-rounded, highly drinkable IPA. Caramel malt barley balances out the hop bitterness and satisfies every need while still letting you do what needs to get done.
I'm wondering if that bit was from the daytime I move things around in our file. I'm wondering, because the daytime's a low alcohol.
That probably was. If you move that around, that probably that is
probably is correct. Yeah, my mistake.
So that's maltier than the daytime for sure.
On the nose, yeah. And I'm, yet again, these are fairly low. Nothing crazy on the nose. I'm not getting a ton of anything.
Yeah, they're not. None of these so far have been very strong, which is shocking.
For as much as they're dry hopping, I know they're dry hopping. It's a California brewery, and they're notorious for dry hopping. And I've got, and dry hopping usually gives you a really good, robust nose.
So this one on the palate is more bitter, a little more bitter. Still not insanely bitter.
I don't think it's as bitter as the little Sumsum.
No, but that is a little bit more piney flavor. It's a little more floral. It's not necessarily, it's not citrusy.
Yeah, yeah, that's a different.
It's just a little, again, like the little something-something. It's a little bitter on the back end, but not very much. These are,
I'd say, easy drinking IPAs so far.
Yeah, and we, once we looked up the ABV, of course, we're not in the hard stuff yet. But,
nope.
These, Lagunitas make some fairly high ABV beers for, like, everyday,
yeah, for their
year rounds.
Especially for a brewery that's not independent anymore. It's interesting that they have this kind of high alcohol profile or portfolio.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, just that IPA is okay.
It's not too bitter. It's not crazy. It's, if you're,
it's just a little bready.
Yeah. If you're looking for an interesting IPA that's not going to offend anyone, this is probably it.
Yeah, so far I would say all of these beers, I think the Pale Wheat Ale, the little something's probably winning so far for me because these IPAs have been so...
blasé.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to our next beer. Next up, we have the Hop Stupid Imperial... Nope, wrong Imperial IPA. I apologize. We have the IPA Maximus.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is the Maximal IPA. Unfortunately, it is not their strongest beer, but it's the maximum IPA we're drinking tonight. It is 8.2% alcohol, 72.41 IBUs. That's very specific. We're down to hundredths now on the IBUs.
No, the specific comes with the gravity next.
Yes, sir. And it is 1.08 OG, or 80 OG.
Yep.
This is a flavor so hoppy, it threatens to remove the enamel from your teeth.
Yeah, that's a pretty bold statement for a list of beers that haven't so far stunned.
Oh, this one's got a nose on it.
Good God. That's trending towards the nail polish category.
Yeah, it's got a big hop flavor. It reminds me a lot of the, not the Bigfoot, the Hoptimum.
Yeah, which Hoptimum from Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, and I think that was Cascade. It was the predominant hop there.
Yep, that's a little astringent-y.
Yep, it's very much Hoptimum.
Nail polishy.
Yep, it is a light Hoptimum. That's what it is. It's Hoptimum light.
Yeah, it's not quite that coat the inside of your mouth triple IPA, but it's getting towards that. I don't know that I would say it removes the enamel from your teeth.
We've had much so, worse.
Yeah, and at this point in the show, we've had a lot worse. It is pretty bitter, really piney. I'm not getting any citrus in there.
It's almost pure resin. It's not even like a nice, like there's very little floral to it. There may be a little bit there that I'm getting on the back end. But like you said, it's astringent-y. It is, to my taste, it tastes like Hoptimum Light.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a easier drinker than Hoptimum, or, I don't know, even what I'm thinking of, Devil Dancer from Founders would be another example. But so this is kind of up there for an Imperial IPA, but it's still, if you're into craft beer and you're into IPAs, this is still drinkable.
Like, yeah.
Pretty easily. You just have to not be looking for those nice subtle fruit tones. And
nothing subtle about this one. No.
Yeah, it's like you have like pine sap or pine resin in your mouth, and that's pretty much it. That actually, you know, that's a stark contrast to what we've had so far.
Yeah, and honestly, it's not going to get much better after this.
No, it is not. All right, I say. With that, let's keep on moving, and we'll go to our next beer, which is the Hop Stupid. So this is another Imperial IPA. It is 8% ABV, 102 IBUs.
Yet again, that goes to 100. Why are they going above 100?
I think, actually, no. So, interesting fact.
Okay.
I read something that said the highest you can go, it was over 100, is the highest that an IBU calculator would go.
You get extra credit?
Yeah, somehow. it goes, I can't remember, I think it was like 113
mm-hmm.
or something like that. It was a weirdly specific number, is the highest that an IBU calculator will go, where after that you're just kind of like making it up. So 102 IBUs is actually doable and registerable.
Okay.
Then you have, this also comes in at 1.085 original gravity. It is a beer with a guarantee built right into the name. Massively dry hopped for your aromatic pleasure. And while Andrew's looking up an IBU calculator,
I'm not. I'm looking up clone recipes because...
okay, that's...
I'm looking up clone recipes because the nose on the Hop Stupid and the Maximus were very similar, and I want to... I am very curious what the dry nougat. Hop is. No, not the nougat's the...
I just wanted to say,
oh my gosh, that's a 90-minute boil. Okay. Yep. All right. Okay.
So there you go.
That's not what I'm concerned with. I'm concerned with the dry hop, because that's the flavor, the smell.
Cascade and
Cascade,
Centennial.
Which is what I was expecting, because it tastes like, smells like Hoptimum. And, oh, Columbus. Mm-hmm. And Simcoe and Chinook for the Hop Stupid. I'm sorry, I'm really off tonight.
Yeah, the Hop Stupid actually has a pretty good nose.
I do.
That's got a little more fruit in it.
That's good.
Some... Maybe, I want to say it's like slightly dried, like tropical fruit.
Oh, definitely. Definitely on the palate. This is, I don't buy that 102 IBUs. The perceived bitterness on this is significantly lower than the Maximus.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just, it's gone a different direction somehow. That's not that resiny.
Yeah. Feel.
This still has that, you know, dry tropical fruit, like papaya, mango, some of those meaty fruits in there with the pine mixed in. That's actually pretty easy drinking for... an 8% imperial.
The reason is the Cascade is the most bigger flavoring hop in the last one, in the Maximus, which is why it tastes so much like Hoptimum to me, because Cascade is the primary hop that Sierra Nevada uses.
You know what the Hop Stupid's reminding me of, though, is a slightly stronger version of the Triple Tail from Sweetwater.
Yes,
if you take that tropical fruit stuff, but add just a little more alcohol in it. That's what that's reminding me of.
This is nice, though.
I know, for a one called Hop Stupid.
I was expecting to hate this, because I was expecting it to be a lot like the Maximus, but this is its own beer. This is very good.
Yeah, well, like I said, this is my first experience with Lagunitas. So, Hop Stupid, because it's funny, because you can buy Hop Stupid is like the only Lagunitas beer I've ever seen that they make that is in a bomber by itself.
Really?
So, yeah, with the 22-ounce bomber, you can buy this for like, you know, $4 or $5. It's like an Arrogant Bastard. Like, it sits next to those, like, in the shelf at the grocery store. But
that's good, though. I would definitely drink that. That's nice.
Yeah, that would be sneakily strong, though, because if you drink a sixer of that,
oh yeah, you're done.
Yeah, you'd be down for the count. So I would only have a couple of those before I'd cap a night off with that.
Honestly, everything we've had so far, except for the Maximus, was sneaky high. Except the daytime, of course, because it's pretty low. But the little something-something and the Hop Stupid will sneak up on you in a heartbeat.
Yeah, the IPA is not going to really get you. That Maximus, I probably couldn't drink more than one of those if I tried.
Right.
But, yeah, that Hop Stupid was... Actually, that's kind of taking first place so far for the night.
I'd say so. Well, let's go on to something that sucks. This is... this is the Lagunitas Sucks.
It's not us. They say it themselves.
Yep, they call it. It is also an Imperial IPA. Shocker.
Yeah.
Everyone's shocked. It's 8% ABV, 63.21 IBUs. They are getting every ounce out of those IBUs that they can. it's a 1.085 OG. It is a cereal medley. Cereal like Fruit Loops.
Like eating your cereal, not cereal as in Cereal Killer.
Or Cereal the Podcast.
When you're done, plug other podcasts.
When you're done listening to our podcast... Only
they're
after.
Not paying us.
Only after you've finished all the brew news, when we actually stop the podcast, then you can listen to cereal.
Yeah.
But no, cereal medley of barley, rye, wheat, and oats. So it's got a very interesting malt bill. And is joyously dry hopped for that big aroma and a resinous flavor.
See, the fact that they're touting resinous flavor in there makes me feel like it's going to be like the Maximus.
Oh, no, it's not. At least not on the nose.
That's...
It's fruity.
Yeah, it's fruity. It's not... as strong as I was expecting that to be.
Honestly, the Maximus is by far the worst nose I think we've had tonight.
Okay, that is resiny in the flavor profile, but there is still like a pithy grapefruit note in the back of that.
I'm getting more like a dried papaya on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm getting in the nose is more of that tropical fruit.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time with the noses on these tonight. I don't know if I'm just congested.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I could be.
I'm just congested 24/7.
I get what you're saying on that, on the fruit up front.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes away into that piney, resinous bitterness, and then
yeah.
You get a little bit of like that pith at the end, but that's actually not...
I like that.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I like that one.
I think the only beer that sucks so far of these Imperial IPAs is the Maximus.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sucks does not suck. It's quite good.
This is good. And all of these beers so far, we'll have to say, have been...
An IPA color?
Yeah, like golden... Kind of, some of them are a little cloudy, but this one's got a thinner head on it than like the wheat ale. The IPAs have kind of had like they've been a little bubbly. This one's not as bubbly in the glass, but the head is pretty thin. It kind of fizzes away pretty quick.
And then in the golden color, it's a little lighter than I would normally expect from some IPAs, but like you said, they're cloudy, but they're not cloudy like a wheat ale is.
They're not murky. Yeah, they're not cloudy like an unfiltered IPA. Like, this has obviously been filtered. Like, this isn't a hazy IPA.
Or something we brewed at home.
Yeah, that we don't have the proper straining equipment to get through.
Dude, that New England IPA, you can't see through it.
No, it looks like apple juice.
It's delicious.
We posted about that. You also couldn't see out of the Southern Hemisphere hop we did, and it had sediment all in it.
Don't hate.
We just need cheesecloth.
Yeah. That beer, that's good though. I'm looking forward to our homebrew episode, and we probably need to brew at least one more.
Yeah, we need at least a handful of homebrews besides the three we already have.
All right. Anyway, that's a digression.
Yeah. So let's end this tasting on a strong note.
You sure you don't want to end it on a sweet note?
We will, with a little brown sugar. This is Lagunitas Brown Sugar. It is a strong ale. It is 10% ABV, 51.1 IBUs. 1.1 OG. It is originally a failed attempt at a batch of their 1997 Gnarly wine. They introduced brown cane sugar to cultured brewery yeast, which resulted in a unique new style of beer they like to call irresponsible.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because, the yeast love sugar. Brewery yeast especially love sugar.
Yeah, so pure brown cane sugar is just giving that yeast all kinds of stuff to feed on, which is going to jack that ABV up.
Yeah, and it has a lovely golden color.
Yeah, so this is, I can see how they accidentally got this while trying to brew a barley wine.
Yeah.
And they just kind of...
Well, they call it a gnarly wine, brah.
Yeah, well, they also...
That ain't so barley, baby, that's gnarly, brah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it probably tastes gnarly.
Honestly, the nose and everything about it makes me think it's probably an attempt at their version of a Belgian strong ale.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think kind of like what they said was they called it a strong ale, though they really said it's like somewhere in between a few different styles, like it was just an accident type of beer, and so it really wasn't like going for a Belgian strong. They were going for a barley wine and messed up and ended with what they just labeled as a strong ale.
No, I have had this beer before, and we bought it because it was 10% and it was on super sale. It's like a six pack for like $4. So Laura and I bought a six pack or two.
Dang. Yeah. Well, I don't think I've ever had brown sugar before, but it doesn't.
You haven't? Well, it's most excellent. It's a nice little, like, more firm than white sugar. You can use it for cooking. It's really, really a good option.
Woo. Wow. Yeah, that is strong. That is pretty strong and pretty sweet.
I actually think it works well, personally.
I don't think it
doesn't put me off. It's not too sweet, but it's also not too boozy. It's not boozy like the sense like a barrel aged something would be.
No,
ooh,
it's not.
This
like
in a barrel.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know though. You could push that a certain way where like.
Oh, it'd get too sweet.
It'd get way too sweet and it would be just like booze heat and sweet. And this, if you barrel age this, you would probably end up somewhere at like the 12 to 13% alcohol range.
I know, but what if you barrel aged it in like a tequila barrel?
Oh god, that'd be terrible.
Just give me a minute, and then let it sit for like a year, so it's not so hot.
See, tequila is one of those flavors though that doesn't really fall off after the barrel.
I like tequila.
I know, but that I don't know that this one would go well with tequila. But I mean, if you did like brandy or some kind of, maybe rye.
Rye might not. Yeah, rye could work. I think there's rye in it, in the malt batch, though.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm thinking, like, that pepperiness may combat some of the sweetness that you get. Yeah. This just isn't doing it for me. It's a combination of strong, like, high alcohol and sugar that just, like, doesn't have much else going on for it.
I think, to me, this is, like, a dangerous beer. Yet again, like, the little something-something, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't taste as strong as it is, and it'll go to your head quick.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't taste like 10%, but you just, I feel like I'm getting all the alcohol and sweetness, and there's, like, no other flavor characteristics.
No redeeming qualities?
Yeah, it just tastes like sugar and alcohol.
Fair enough.
I don't know, this is kind of like a, yeah, I think you're right, it's, like, close to a Belgian strong ale, but you don't get that Belgian yeasty
flavor. Yeah, I get a flavor. Little, I get some of that Belgian yeast flavor on the, not flavor, on the nose. I smelled something that reminded me of Belgian yeast, but after that, you're right, it's just sweet booze.
I think this is actually pretty close to a barley wine, even though they missed the mark on it. I think that's why I don't like it. It's close enough to a barley wine. Yeah, it's close enough to a barley wine that it's not.
I'll say this. It is a more drinkable barley wine than the Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Well, with that, I think that concludes the tasting and the episode. So, Andrew, final thoughts on Lagunitas?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I mean, I enjoy the beers I've had from Lagunitas. I hadn't had a lot. Before tonight, I've had the brown sugar, and I think, do they have, they're not brown, they're not, they don't do the, no, that's different brewery entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I know which
one you're thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, because they have a little dog character that the
Yeah, so like Lagunitas, I mean, like, if you think about the 12th of Never Ale, the Citronaceous.
I have seen a lot of them. I'm trying to think. I seen it. But the brown sugar I know I've had, and I think there's been one other Lagunitas. So I hadn't had a lot of Lagunitas. It was great because we could get it, and I honestly thought they were out of Chicago because I didn't know they had their original California brewery. I only knew about the Chicago brewery. I hadn't had a lot of them. I'm glad we tried it. The beer's good. Pass on the Maximus. There's better IPAs out there. Honestly, the daytime, take it or leave it, but the Little Something and the Hop Stupid and the Sucks, all three of those I would drink again, and I've drank in the brown sugar before. It's good for if you just want to get drunk.
Yeah. I think... with that, also, I think we should do something new. Beer of the night.
Oh, beer of the night? Ooh.
Yeah, because I think we need to start doing that. So we've had 7 tonight. We need to start saying, you know, we always say the ones like, eh, okay, I could leave that one. But beer of the night, if you had to pick one for the evening, what would it be?
I would either go with the Sucks or the Hop Stupid. Probably the Sucks, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I can see that.
What about you?
I think I would go with the Hop Stupid or the Little Something, and I think I'm trending towards the Hop Stupid. Just I like that tropical, like lush flavor notes in there with the IPA. Wheat ales aren't normally my favorite, but that's a pretty good wheat ale.
It really is.
And then as far as Lagunitas goes, I mean, hate that they went the sellout route. It just like they're
at least it's a Dutch brewery.
They seem to really just get off on pissing people off and like being anti-establishment, and it goes to that. I know we keep talking about it all the time, but we said, you know, like places have countercultures like Oscar Blues, Unknown, all of that. But this is not a counterculture that's like, hey, we respect everybody, we love everybody, and we want everybody. This is like F you to everybody.
Yeah.
We're doing what we want to do.
Yeah.
Screw you guys. If you don't like it, don't drink it, whatever. I mean, this one's a little harsher of a counterculture vibe, but
it's not quite as mellow as we're expecting from most of our breweries, because most of them have a very similar vibe.
Most craft breweries are pretty chill. This one's pretty in your face. And I think, you know, I've had a lot of Lagunitas over the years, a Little Something Ale. I think I've had 12th of Never. Had the Maximus, Hop Stupid. I've had a few of their limited releases. I know I've had the, actually, not the limited releases, the one hitters. I had a Willetized Coffee Stout before that one was hot again, like the High West Whiskey Barrel Aged Victory at Sea. So I should have let that one age, but I popped it and it was on fire. Other than that, you know, like, it's one of those, like, we've talked about a lot before. I don't actively go out and, like, hey, I'm going to go grab some Lagunitas. I see it on the shelf. It's like, If I see something unique from Lagunitas, I'm going to get it. And I'll drink the little something. And I've gotten hop stupid before just being out and about. But Lagunitas isn't one of those that you see in restaurants very much.
No, not, at least not here. Yeah. I mean, we're on the East Coast. We don't see
anything. And if I'm going to the grocery store or a bottle shop or like our local Total Wine or something, I'm going to probably pass that one over for something else. But all in all, they make some decent beers. And they seem to go on the higher side of the ABV in the beers that we tend to drink.
I think, honestly, Heineken would be smart to... I know Budweiser does this with their InBev and Molson. They do this with their craft brands, is they make sure those show up at bars because they understand that craft beer drinkers want variety. So bars that have Bud Light, you'll often find one of their subsidiary companies. Bars that have a Miller Lite will also find one of their subsidiaries. I am absolutely floored that Heineken, you find a bar with Heineken, you don't find Lagunitas.
No.
Almost never.
No, and that goes back to the story at the beginning of the video, or at the beginning of the episode, that, you know, Lagunitas, it's either one of those, like, that's the only thing they carried in that restaurant that we were at, or you just don't see it. Like, you got to pick it up in a store, and I think you're right about that. Like, it's interesting that as big as Heineken is and as ubiquitous as Heineken is, like, everywhere, like, you go to almost any bar and get a Heineken, that they don't at least carry the little something or the IPA or the daytime or, like, just one, at least one Lagunitas beer.
And I think that's the problem. I mean, when we started this tasting, we think Lil Something is their flagship. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't really have a flagship beer for them because they make a decent amount of stuff, but you just never always see one specific beer if you see Lagunitas somewhere.
Yeah, probably their IPA is the one, because people mistakenly assume that craft beer drinkers just want to drink IPAs.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of true for some people.
Some people do, but that's not true of all craft beer drinkers. You and I both enjoy IPAs, but if we find a stout or... I mean, yesterday I had a Berliner Weiss with your brother-in-law.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, nice.
It was from Grimm. It was delicious.
Oh, well, Grimm does make good Berliner Weisses. We'll do a Grimm episode in the future and get into their sours and Berliner Weisses.
Oh, so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that about wraps it up. You know, we encourage you guys to get out and give Lagunitas a try if you haven't. Thank you guys for listening, as always, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this week's Brew News.
If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to subscribe and give us a rating in whichever app you found us on. We value your feedback, and it also helps the show reach more viewers.
If you have any thoughts or suggestions for future breweries, or are with a brewery and like to join us, feel free to tweet at or follow us on Twitter, @brew_news. On Untapped, Travis is Mather Nuts, and Andrew is Tuba Steve.
We're on Instagram @BrewNewsPod, and you can visit our website, brewnewspod.com, where we will post our tasting and episode notes.
You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Anchor, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you use.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week to look at another exciting brewery.
Cheers! Cheers.
Have you ever wondered how you could join the Brew News crew? Well, swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod and you can join us. We have 3 different tiers for all of our patrons. At the lager level, you earn early access to all of our podcast episodes. At the IPA level, you get early access to our podcast episodes, but you get special weekly beer tastings that are done by various members of the crew. And you get special video presentations, including our Beermas special. At the stout level, you get everything you get at the IPA level, but you also get to appear on one episode of the Brew News Pod, and when we have some swag, we'll send some your way. So feel free to swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod, that again is patreon.com/brewnewspod, and join the crew.